Osho, Returning to the Source, Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 7.
Bhagwan, for nearly 20 years, Hoen, a layman devoted to Zen, lived at Yakusan Temple and undertook discipline under the master Eigen. The day came when he decided to return to his family. The master asked 10 of the disciples to see him off at the gate. It was snowing, and Hoen, looking up, said, "Lovely. Snowflakes as beautiful as these don't fall elsewhere." "Elsewhere?" said one of the 10. "Where is this elsewhere?" At this, Hoen slapped his face. "Why did you do that, dear layman?" asked the disciple, rubbing his cheek. "How can you pose as a Zen man?" Hoen said angrily. "You're doomed to hell." "And you?" the disciple cried. "What about yourself?" Hoen slapped him again. "You've eyes, but you won't see," he said over his shoulder as he moved off. "And you have a mouth, but you're dumb."
Few things before we enter this beautiful anecdote. First, time should be forgotten completely. If you want to enter meditation, time should not be a concern to you. If you are in a hurry, then nothing is possible. And this has become a most deeply rooted problem for the modern man. The West has made people too much time conscious. Not knowing where they are going, but they go in speed, because time is short. I have heard once a pilot communicated on the intercom to the passengers that it seems everything has gone wrong. The radar is not functioning. The radio is out of order. Even the compass has stopped to function. But don't be worried. We are keeping the same speed. But this is what is happening to the modern mind. Everything is out of order except speed. Where are you going? For what are you going? Of course you are going fast. And you are going so fast, you have no time to look where are you going and why are you going. People come to me and they say that I can stay only one day here. Is meditation possible, they ask? Can you give me something so I can know the divine? They are childish, juvenile. They have not grown up at all. They don't know what they are saying. Is God something one can give it to you as a gift? Is God a certain technique so the formula can be given to you and you can work it out later on? Is it something like a material key So it can be given to you and you can unlock the door. This search needs tremendous patience, infinite patience. This is the first requirement. You should simply forget about time. What is time? It is a very anxious state of mind. You are too much worried for the tomorrow, too much worried for the future, too much worried for the past. You are pulled in these two opposite directions, the past and the future. And you are worried because you have not gained anything in the past. You are worried, who knows, the same may happen in the future also as it has happened in the past. Nothing. You have achieved in the past and it may be you may not achieve anything in the future. So you are in a hurry. But just hurry won't help. It disturbs you. The modern man is farther away from God, not because he is more materialistic. No, man has always been materialistic. Has to be so, because a man is 99% body. Always man has been materialistic. This is nothing new. Is it because of too much scientific training and education? No. Science is not against God. It may not be for God, but it is not against God at all. It simply says God is not my concern at all. It is not. They exist on different planes. Science cannot say yes or no to God. They are not moving in the same dimension. The dimensions differ. So science has not made man atheistic. Then what is making people atheistic, farther away from God? No, not even communism. Communism may have created new gods, but it has not destroyed the old one. It cannot. Communism itself is a religion. Then what? To me, it is time consciousness, which is a new factor in the world, a new factor in human consciousness, which is creating the trouble. And it has become deep-rooted, particularly in Christianity, Judaism. It has gone very, very deep-rooted. And the cause of it is that Christianity and Judaism and Islam, they are all the three, come from the same source of Judaism. All three are Jewish. In the world, there are only two religions, in fact. One is Hindu, another is Jew. Mohammedan and Christianity come out of Jewish sources, just offshoots. Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism come out of Hinduism, just offshoots. There is a deep-rooted problem in Jewish thinking, and that is they deny rebirth. They deny the theory of a circle of births. They believe in only one life, and that dominates the West. If there is only one life, then you will be in a hurry. Because time is short and too many things have to be done. You cannot move at ease. That's why so much speed and everything moving fast, and everybody is worried that life is slipping out of the hand, and you have only one life. In the East, it is believed that you have millions of lives. There is no hurry. Time is not sought. Don't be worried about it. Enough to waste, and even enough always is there in reserve. It is eternal. You will be born again and again, again and again. It is a circle. You move. You come again. You go. You come again. So there is no need to be worried about time. That's why in the Western eyes, the East looks lethargic, lazy, not doing anything. Nobody is worried. People can relax under the trees. No hurry. But this no hurry helps religion. The mind who is too time conscious may create many materialistic miracles, but it will miss the inner dimension, because the inner dimension is approached only when you are absolutely patient. You will miss many things if you are patient, that's right, but you will never miss yourself. If you want to create an empire of things, positions, then be in a hurry. Then think that time is money and very precious, and use it to create more and more things. But you will be lost. When you will die, you would have piled a great empire of things. But dying, you will come to realize that you have not achieved anything. The whole effort has been a failure. Because unless you achieve yourself, nothing is achieved. Unless you come to yourself, you have not come to any point. The life may have been a journey, but you have not reached to the goal. So this you have to decide. Time consciousness you have to drop. Simply forget about time. Time is always available. It is not like money. It is like the sky. It is available always. You cannot exhaust it. So don't run. You can sit at ease. You can relax. You can sit like a Buddha. Look at the statue of Buddha sitting as if there is no time. He doesn't seem to be in a hurry. It is said, one of the old Zen stories, that once two monks were crossing a stream in a ferry boat. One was very old, another was very, very young. When they got down from the ferry boat, they asked the man who has brought them to this shore, that will it be possible that we reach to this town where we are headed before the sun sets? Because it was a hilly trek and sun was just coming down. At the most they had 1 hour, and they had to reach before the sun sets, because once the doors of the town are closed, then the whole night they will have to remain in the forest outside the town, and it is dangerous. Wild animals are there. The ferry boatman said, yes, you can reach if you go slowly. The old man could understand, because a certain wisdom happens in old age. The youth is always in a hurry. This is paradoxical. An old man should be in a hurry because time is short. But it is always the opposite. The young man is always in a hurry when there is enough time. Because this hurry comes from the inside energy, ignorance. An old man can understand. The old man said, "Yes, I understand." But the young man said, "You are fools, you both. How one can reach if one goes slowly? And I'm not going to listen to this stupid nonsense." He started running. It was a hilly trek. And he was in such a hurry. That which was to happen, happened. He fell down. He was hurt, wounded. All things scattered. And then reached the old man. Because he was coming slowly. He looked at the young man. He was crippled. Blood was flowing. And he said, "Now, how will be able to reach?" "You tried to reach fast. Now you cannot reach at all." It is said that the young man was devoured by the wild beasts. But the old man reached by the time the sun was setting. He reached at the door, just in the nick of time. He entered the city. This is a parable. And in fact, the track is hilly. When you are moving towards the divine, the track is hilly. There are valleys and peaks, and you can fall any moment. The territory is dangerous, and millions of wild animals are all around. You have to reach to the gate before the gate closes. But if you run fast, you will not be able to reach. Because when you run fast, you cannot be conscious. Have you ever tried running fast? If you run very fast, the very speed gives you an intoxication. That's why so much addiction to speed. If you drive a car, the mind wants to go on more and more and more and more, faster. It gives the intoxication. Its speed, fastness releases certain chemicals in the body and in the blood. That's why you would like to go on pressing the accelerator. More people die every year in car accidents than in a world war. Second world war is nothing. More people die every year in car accidents. People go on getting more and more speed, then they become intoxicated. Then a moment comes, they are not in their minds. Then the speed has taken over. You start running one day and just watch what happens. A moment comes when the speed takes over. That is the acceleration of speed. And just the opposite happens if you slow down. What a Buddha is doing under the tree. slowing down their speed, nothing else. What I am teaching continuously to you is slow down thy speed. Come to a point where there is no speed within you, nobody running. In that moment, awareness happens, you become enlightened. And there are two poles. One is speed, then you are intoxicated, you become unconscious. Another is no speed, slowed down completely, totally, absolute stop. Suddenly you become enlightened. This is the first thing to be understood, slow down your speed. Eat slowly, walk slowly, talk slowly, move very, very slowly. And by, you will come to know the beauty of inactivity, the beauty of passivity. Then you are not intoxicated, you are completely aware and conscious. Second thing, you cannot pose like an enlightened man. Many people tried, and they can deceive also many others, because fools are everywhere. But you cannot pose before a man who knows. One who knows himself, you cannot deceive him. There is no possibility. Because he can look into you, you become transparent. Never try to pose. But the mind is so cunning, even if you come to a master, you try to pose before him. You would like to show your knowledge. You would like to show that you have attained something. And the very effort to show shows that nothing has been attained. Because when one attains, the exhibitionist disappears. Then you don't pose. Then you are simply there. Whatsoever you are there. And remember, continuously, because even a single moment of unawareness and the mind starts posing, it has become a routine habit. Once Mullah Nasruddin's doctor told him that now you are behaving absolutely madly and you are going to kill yourself, and I would warn you the last time that you are behaving in a suicidal way. I have told you now, stop all irregular habits, live a regular life. Otherwise, you will die soon. Nasruddin said, but I always have lived a regular life. The doctor said, what? To whom you are trying to deceive? Just the other night I saw you coming out of a prostitute's house in the mid of night. And the way you were walking, I could see you were completely drunk. So to whom you are trying to deceive? Nasruddin laughed loudly. He said, but that is my regular habit. I have always lived a regular life. Deceiving others is your regular habit. It has gone into the very roots. You do it without knowing that you are doing it. That's the problem. you go on posing. If it is a regular habit, how can you suddenly drop it when you come to a master? There also the regular habit will persist. Mahakashyap, Sariputra, Moggallan, all great disciples of Buddha had to wait for 2 years before Buddha will start teaching. Sariputra asked, why we have to wait for 2 years? Buddha said, just to give a gap so that your old habits slow down. Because if they persist, you will not listen to me. If they persist, they will not allow you to see me. If they persist, whatsoever you do will be a confusion. Just 2 years, let things slow down. 2 years, don't do anything. Just remain silent, watchful. So you can become aware of things which you have been doing continuously without knowing that you are doing. Posing, showing that which you are not, is dangerous. And with a master it is absolutely dangerous. Because it is not going to help anybody and you are missing an opportunity. Never pose. If you pose, then the authentic cannot surface. Then the posture remains all around you. You have many faces. Then when and how the original face will surface? Allow the original face to come. You drop all postures. You drop all faces. For a few days you will feel dizzy without a face. You will feel very uncomfortable without your old pattern and habits. For a few days you will feel that you have lost your identity. That's okay. That's how it should be. One has to lose the identity to regain the real identity. One has to lose all faces to gain the real face that you have before you were born and that you will have when you are died, when you are no more. The original will be with you. Never pose. Now try to enter this story. For nearly 20 years, Haun, a layman devoted to Zen, lived at Yakusen temple and undertook discipline under master again. 20 years, one third of life. And he waited, as if there was no hurry. 20 years, just think. 2 days seem to be too long. 2 months, 2 years. 20 years seems just a whole life. He must have come near about when he was 20, a young man. And when he came out of the temple, he was already old. The whole youth, the whole energy, has to be devoted. Remember, time consciousness will be a barrier. It is said, there is a Zen story. One old man was dying. He called his son and told him that I would like you to attain meditation before I die. Because in my whole life, I have come to realize nothing is more important. So I am not giving you riches. I am not giving you any prestige, power of this world. This is going to be my only gift. So you go to a master and learn meditation. The boy was afraid to leave because the father was old and any day he can die. He was just on the dying bed. But when the father said, you have to go, he had to go. He reached a Zen master and told the whole thing, that my father is very, very old, almost dying. And he wants me to learn meditation before he dies. He would like my meditative face to see. And I would like to make him happy. So just tell me how long it will take for me to become meditative. The Zen master said, 3 years. The young man said, I will do as much effort as possible. I will put my total energy in it. Then, how much it will take? How long? The Zen master said, 30 years. He said, what are you saying? I am saying I will put my total energy. And before that you said 3 years. The master said, I thought that you were going to put your total energy. That's why I said 3 years. And then you say, now I will put my total energy. 30 years. And if you ask again about time, it is impossible. 90 years. The boy said, but my father is dying. The master said, what can I do? Everybody has to die. And that is not my concern. Meditation doesn't bother who is dying or not dying. Never ask about the time again. Otherwise, leave me. The boy watched the master. He was the right man. The fragrance was there. The quality that exists around a master. He could feel it. He could exactly touch it. It was there all around him, like light, an aura. He said, okay. He touched the master's feet and said, I will never ask about the time and you start the teaching. The master said, good. You clean the house. And whenever time is ready, I will start. 3 years passed and he has not even started. But by this time, the young man also became perceptive. He couldn't understand that he was foolish asking about time. These 3 years slowed him down. He was just cleaning the house the whole day. And cleaning the house is not a mental thing. You have to do it by the body, so mind by and by stops. Then he became perceptive and he couldn't see that I was foolish. The question was nonsense. And now there was no point. The master knows whenever the right moment comes, he will start. The day he thought inside that he knows, and whenever time comes, he will start. The very day the master started. And what was the start? He came from the behind and attacked the boy. He was sweeping. He attacked with a wooden sword. The boy screamed and jumped. The master says, this is my first teaching, now be aware. Any moment I will attack. So just don't simply clean and wash and sweep. Be alert. I am a dangerous man. And now the attacks started. Within 3 minutes, the boy was so alert, he had to be. Because any moment, from anywhere, the master will come like a wind and attack. He started dodging. he learned the trick, he became more and more alert and became more and more happy. By the third month, the master said, "This won't do. Now in sleep also. Remain alert. I will come any moment and jump on you." The master brought his mattress in the boy's room. Said, "I will sleep here." Now even the sleep was not left alone. The boy by and by learned, because the master would jump at least 12 times in the night. He will attack any moment. The moment he will be getting into his sleep, he will attack. He became so alert that by the third month, again, the body sleeps, he remains alert. And he started dodging in the sleep. The moment the master will jump, he will be already out of his bed. Even in his sleep, with closed eyes, he became so perceptive. He had to. Then the master said, "It's not enough. Now tomorrow, I am going to purchase a real sword. This wooden sword won't do. And remain alert, because now I will be attacking with the real sword. And you miss once and finished." But by this time, the awareness was penetrating very, very deep. The boy laughed, because he knew now he cannot miss a single moment. Now he became so perceptive that the master had no need to attack, because the moment the master will think to attack, he will say, "Wait, no need. You are an old man, why?" So just the thinking, the master will think inside and the boy will say, "Wait, you may kill yourself." Three months passed, these 9 months, and the master said one day, "Now you are ready, you can go to your father." The boy thought, "This old man has been torturing me in every possible way. I am grateful because I have become aware and meditative. But will it not be good that before I leave, I should attack on this old man and see what happens?" The old man started laughing. He said, "Remember, I am an old man." Time should not be a concern, because time is against meditation. Time is mind. And in meditation, there is no time. Meditation is beyond time. There is no space, no time. When you are deeply in meditation, you don't know what time it is. You cannot know, you cannot feel time. And you don't know where you are. You cannot feel space. And if you go a little deeper, you don't know who you are. Everything disappears, time, space, and all the configurations of time and space, the ego, everything disappears. You simply are. This is the being. This is the truth. 20 years, Haun, a layman devoted to Zen, lived at Yakusan temple and undertook discipline under master again. Zen doesn't believe in renouncing the world. If you renounce, it's okay. If you don't renounce, it is also okay. It is up to you. Both are good. The basic thing is not the world, or renouncing the world. The basic thing is to be alert and aware wherever you are. Even a layman, a householder, can attain to the perfect enlightenment. In this, Zen is very, very liquid. It gives you total freedom. Your style of life in this world doesn't matter. Hindus have insisted that you have to renounce the world. Jains have insisted you have to renounce the world. Even Buddha insisted. Buddha had, in fact, no householders as his disciples. The whole Indian tradition is for renouncing the world. But Lao Tse, Chuang Tse, they lived in the world. They lived fully aware. Chuang Tse's wife died, and the corpse was lying there. People were gathering, the neighbors, and then they will take it. And he was sitting under a tree, beating a drum and singing. The king himself had come to pay respects. He also respected Chuang Tse very much, and his wife is dead. So he had come. But when he saw Chuang Tse beating a drum, he couldn't contain himself. He said, "Don't weep, I can understand. But this is going too far. Don't be sad, I can understand. But singing and beating a drum, it is going too far. What are you doing?" Chuang Tse said, "She lived with me. She was a beautiful woman. She served me. She loved me. She gave me many beautiful moments. She was really lovely. Can't I even give her a good goodbye? She is leaving. It may not be possible for us to meet again. Can't I even sing and beat a little drum while she is leaving? And she lived so long with me, and she has done so much for me. Can't I do even this much?" Now, this is a perfectly alert man. He has not renounced the wife. He has lived in the world like an ordinary man, but he is not ordinary, he is extraordinary. Buddhism and Tao met, and Zen was born. So Zen says both are good. If you live in the world, it is okay, but live alert. If you renounce, if you feel like renouncing, that too is good, but renounce alert. So the basic thing is not the form, but the spirit. This Haun was a layman. He was not a bhikkhu. He was not a sannyasin. He has not renounced life. But what a man. For 20 years he has not gone to the family. What more renunciation, you ask? For 20 years he has not remembered the family. For 20 years he has not talked about it. What more renunciation, you ask? And when he becomes enlightened, the master says, "Now you can go." Now he is going to his family back. He is totally transformed. But he is going back. The wife may be waiting, the children may be there, the old parents may be there, maybe they are dead. He is going back. There is a saying in Zen that before you are enlightened, rivers are rivers and mountains are mountains. When you start meditating, rivers are no more rivers and mountains are no more mountains. Everything is topsy-turvy. Then you attain again. Everything falls in line. Rivers are rivers again. Mountains are mountains again. Just in the middle, everything is disturbed. Then everything settles again. Of course, it settles on a totally different plane. Now this man is returning to the wife, but he is no more a husband. This man is returning to the children, but he is no more a father. This man is returning to his old parents, but he is no more a son. This man is returning back to his shop, but he is no more a shopkeeper. Zen says, it is up to you. And there are different types of people. Zen gives freedom to all. There are people who would like to remain in the mountains. Good. There are people who would like to remain in the markets. Very good. Zen says, it is up to you. The style of your life is up to you. That is not the thing to be worried about. The basic thing is to be alert. This hound attained alertness. He became aware and conscious. The day came when he decided to return to his family. The master asked 10 of his disciples to see him off at the gate. He was ready. He's going back. And the master asked 10 of his disciples to see him off at the gate. This 10 is symbolical. 10 are the senses. 5 senses touch, smell, eyes, outward. And 5 are the inward, because you can see out, you can see in. When you see out, your outer eyes function. When you see in, the inner eye functions. 5 are the senses to move out. 5 are the senses to move in. And these senses, which are 5, through which you move out, they are 2. 2 eyes, 2 ears, 2 hands. There is a duality. The 5 senses from which you enter in, they are one. One eye, that is called the third eye. One ear, you can call it the third ear. One nose, you can call it the third nose. 5 outgoing pairs of senses. 5 unit ingoing. In all, they are 10. So the master says to his 10 disciples to go and give him a good goodbye at the gate. This is symbolic. This happens when someone attains enlightenment. The senses come up to the gate. From where they leave you. From there beyond they cannot go. From there comes the beyond. The senses come to a certain point from where they leave you. And they have lived with you so long. It is good that they come and see you off at the gate. It was snowing, and hound looking up said, lovely. Snowflakes as beautiful as these don't fall elsewhere. A Buddha has also to use your language. An enlightened person has also to use your words. but the significance changes. He cannot use them in the same sense as you use, because the sense comes from the user, not from the words. His meaning is different. For example, no Buddha, one who has attained, can use any comparison or comparative words. If he says this is good, he doesn't mean that there is something bad also. But for us, duality exists. If somebody says you are beautiful, immediately you compare it with ugliness. But when a Buddha says you are beautiful, he is simply saying it to you, not in any comparative sense. He is not thinking of anything which is ugly and comparing it to you. His words don't carry any comparison. He says you are beautiful, and he will say the same to somebody else also, and somebody else also, you are beautiful. He can even say you are the most beautiful person in the world. But don't think that he is comparing the whole world to you. Wait a little, he will say the same thing to somebody else. Because to him everything is the most beautiful. He is not saying anything about you. In fact, he is saying about his own quality, that whosoever comes near him, he feels him the most beautiful. It is his feeling that he is showing through it. It is nothing about you. You don't be deceived by his words, because you will think in comparison. One day Mullah Nasruddin came to me, and I asked him, Nasruddin, many people say that you are effeminate. He said, they are right, in comparison to my wife. I am. We think in terms of comparison. If somebody says to everybody, you are beautiful, to us the meaning of that word beautiful is lost. Because if you don't say to anybody that you are ugly, what do you mean by your word beautiful? If somebody said everything is good, nothing is bad, then what is the meaning of his word good? To us, the word good carries any meaning only in comparison to bad. An enlightened person has to use your words with a different quality of his consciousness. He doesn't compare. This man Haun is enlightened. He says, lovely. Snowflakes as beautiful as these don't fall elsewhere. How many comparisons he is using. Lovely. To us simply it appears that this man must say something else is not lovely. Otherwise, what is the meaning of lovely? Snowflakes as beautiful as these. Immediately to our minds it comes, he is comparing with other snowflakes. As these don't fall elsewhere, immediately we think that he is comparing this moment, this here now, with something else, somewhere else. But he is not. He is simply expressing this moment, how he feels. He is not comparing. At another place, he will again look up and say, lovely. Such snowflakes, such beautiful snowflakes, fall nowhere else. He will say everywhere the same. Buddha is reported to have said, you taste the sea anywhere and you will find it salty. You have to watch a man who has attained, a man of understanding, you have to watch. And you have to drop your old habits of comparison. Once it happened, a man came to Buddha. And Buddha said, beautiful, you are a beautiful person. I have never come across like you. One of the chief disciples, Ananda, was sitting. He became uneasy. When the man left, he said, but the same thing you told me and the same thing you have been telling to others. And I have been hearing this to many people because he was always present. What do you mean? Buddha laughed and said, everyone is beautiful. And everyone is beautiful, so much beautiful, that everyone is more beautiful than everybody else. Nonsense. How can everyone be more beautiful than everybody else? And everyone, everybody else is included in everyone. He is not saying anything about the person, he is saying something about his consciousness. When you attain, simply the whole world becomes a blessing. When you attain, suddenly everything is beautiful, illuminated, luminous. Nothing is dark, nothing is sin, nothing is evil. When you are fulfilled, you look around and everything is so fulfilled, so complete, so perfect. That perfection is total because you have attained it. A man who has attained cannot condemn. Just a few days before, the roof fell down at the back of this house. And the first thing that came to me was, how beautiful a ruin. It was so perfect. You cannot make a better ruin like that. It was simply perfect. Everything came so beautifully in such a pattern as if someone has been doing it. It was not just an accident, as if someone has created it. If you can see things with perfect awareness, everything is good. You feel blessed by everything and you can bless everything. This is what was happening. He said, looking up, lovely snowflakes, as beautiful as these, don't fall elsewhere. Elsewhere, said one of the ten, where is this elsewhere? And he is right, because a man who has attained is expected not to compare. Comparison belongs to the ignorant mind. Comparison is part of the ignorant mind. So how a man who has attained can talk in terms of comparison? Then an enlightened man is always here and now. How can he talk about elsewhere? There is no elsewhere for an enlightened man. This disciple must have heard all these things. He must have accumulated them in his memory and reason. He must have been a head-oriented person. He immediately raised a question. Elsewhere? What do you mean? Where is this elsewhere? You are bringing comparison in, and we have heard that a man who has attained never compares. He lives without comparison. He does not know comparison at all. If you live only this moment, how can you compare? How can you say this moment is beautiful? You are bringing other moments in, and you are comparing. Then other moments were not so beautiful. Then what type of attainment is this? Where is this elsewhere? At this hound slapped his face. Why he slapped his face? To bring him to his senses. You need to be slapped many times. Because sometimes just answer won't help. It will create more questions. And when there is a head-oriented person, you cannot answer him. Because the answer will bring many more new questions. The more you answer, the more questions arise. Slapping is needed. Have you ever observed if somebody suddenly slaps you, the mind stops immediately for a moment? And when it is unexpected, absolutely unexpected, who will expect such a rational question? And they have come to see this man off. They were not thinking that he will be rude. He slept. He tried to bring you back down. Remember, neither your consciousness has any mind, nor your body. Mind exists just in between. It is a ghost phenomenon. If you come totally in the body, then to mind disappears. You come totally to consciousness, then to mind disappears. If you cannot come totally to consciousness, then a master will slap you to bring you back to the body at least. Because at that moment also there is no mind. That's the beauty of sex and the appeal of sex. It slaps you so deeply, you come back to the body. For a single moment, thinking is lost. And that is why in a war, people feel very exhilarated, euphoric. Because when you are facing death, suddenly you are in the body. The mind has disappeared. Many things appeal you only because they give you a shock, a gambler. What is the appeal in gambling? He puts all that he has on the stick. Now, nobody knows what is going to happen. The unexpected is waiting just by the corner. He is thrilled, but he cannot think. Thinking leaves for a moment. When the dice fall on the table, there is no thinking. He is simply waiting. In that waiting, there is no mind. The man has come totally to the body. Mind disappears, and that is the best moment, the most relaxed. But with the body, it cannot disappear forever, only for a moment. It is just like you take a dive into the water. How long you can remain there? You can force yourself a little bit and then you will be out again. You can take a dive into the body. Sex is a dive into the body. Gambling is a dive into the body. Alcohol is a dive into the body. You can take a little dive and then you are back again, more frustrated. But Zen masters have used sleeping, because it can make you a little awake. And in that awakening, it is possible to see the man who has slept you. And he is the answer. No answer can be given. Whenever you ask, the person is the answer. And he is bringing you to the body, so the mind disappears. And you can look at this person. But you can miss also, if you become too much concerned about the sleeping, that why you slept me, you are making a question out of sleeping also. Then you miss. This man is saying, please come closer. Stop asking, stop thinking, just look at me. In the sack you can look. At this hound slept his face. Why did you do that, dear layman? Asked the disciple, rubbing his cheek. He is too much concerned with the sleep. The point is missed. He has made a question out of it. And that was the point, not to make a question out of it. Just to look the man who has slept. And this hound was really beautiful at that moment. At his peak, 20 years effort has come to a culmination. He is moving back into the world. He is going to the point where mountains and rivers again become mountains and rivers. He has touched the source, moving to the circumference, to the world, to test it whether it is real or not. It is easy to attain something in a isolated monastery. It is easy to feel that something you have attained there, but the real test lies in the market, in the world. There where situations will be, challenges will be, will you be able to stand? This man is coming from the source, carrying the freshness, the fragrance of the source. At this moment he was most beautiful, just as fresh as dewdrop in the morning, as fresh as a new lotus, just opening its petals. And that is the most beautiful state of consciousness. He slapped this man in a deep compassion to bring him to the fact that don't bother about questions. I am here. Look at me. Why did you do that, dear layman? Asked the disciple, rubbing his cheek. How can you pose as a Zen man? Hound said angrily. You are doomed to hell. How can you pose as a Zen man? You are asking questions as if you know. Remember, there are two types of questions. One question that comes out of ignorance, it is beautiful. One question that comes out of your knowledge, it is ugly. A question that comes out of ignorance can be answered, and a master will help you to find the answer. A question that comes out of your knowledge, you cannot be helped. That's why Hound said, how can you pose as a Zen man? You are doomed to hell. because all those who know without knowing, they are doomed to hell. All scholars, if they don't become alert, aware, and see that they are hiding their ignorance through theories, creating a screen of knowledge around, trying to hide that they don't know, posing as if they know, are doomed to hell. A sinner can reach heaven. That is not heard ever that a scholar ever reaches. Because if you think you know already, all doors are closed for knowledge to enter. That's why he said angrily, you are doomed to hell. How can you pose as a Zen man? And you, the disciple cried, what about yourself? Hound slapped him again. Hound is present there. He can be felt. You can drink and eat him in that moment. He can become part of you. He is available. And this disciple asked, and you? The disciple cried, what about yourself? His ego is hurt. He and doomed to hell? His ego comes in. The slapping has not awakened him. He has gone deeper into his sleep. Now he is in a fighting mood. His anger is arising. And he said, what about you? Where are you going? I am going to the hell. Where are you going? Hound slapped him again. You have eyes, but you won't see. He said over his soldier as he moved off. And you have a mouth, but you are dumb. I'm here, he said. A man at the peak of his glory. I'm here, and you have eyes, but you won't see. And you have a mouth, but you are dumb. A mouth is dumb if it is used by the mind. Then it is just chattering mechanically. A mouth is not dumb when it is not used by mind but silence. So remember, there are dumb people chattering continuously. And there are silent people who have really a mouth, who are not dumb, but they don't chatter. They only say that which they have known. They only say that which can be helpful. They only say that which is needed by you. Talking is not their need. They talk just to help you. You talk, it is a mad need within you because you cannot be silent. You go on talking just to avoid silence. Your talk is a monologue. You are not talking to the other. The other is just an excuse. And he is also not talking to you. And he is also not listening to you. Neither you are listening to him. He is posing that he is listening. He is just waiting for the right moment when he can start talking. He is just waiting for the right link from where he can go on, from where he can take it over. I have heard a leader had come to the town. Many people gathered to listen him, but by and by they all left. By the time the leader was going to finish his talk, only Mulla Nasruddin was left. He was very thankful and he said, "I am very, very grateful. I never thought that you are such a lover of me, and such a follower." Nasruddin said, "Nothing. That is not the thing. I am the next speaker here." So if you are finished, I should start. When somebody is listening to you, remember, he is the next speaker. He is just waiting for you to finish. And if you go on and on, he will tell to people that you are a bore. And what he means really is that you never gave him a chance to bore. Those people are called bores who never give any chance to you to start. They go on and on and on. They never give you a small space so that you can take over. A master speaks. His words come from the silence, from his inner silence. You speak, your words come from your inner madness. That's why Hound says, "You have eyes, but you won't see." Why you can't see? Because eyes are filled with many thoughts, just as if the sky is covered completely by clouds in the rains. You cannot see where the sky is. When the thoughts are too many floating in your eyes, you cannot see. And when thoughts are floating too much in your mind, you are dumb. Be silent. First attend to silence. Then your word carries a tremendous force, energy. Then whatsoever you say or not say, it has a significance. Every gesture of you is a poetry. Even if you sit silent, you release tremendous energy around you, which is a communion. Silence is the source of all energy. But you talk through your madness. You have an obsession to talk. That's why if you are put in isolation for a few days, you will start talking to yourself. After the third week, you cannot wait anymore for somebody to listen. You start talking to yourself. You cannot wait anymore. Now there is so much. It has to be thrown out. Your talking is a catharsis. It is a cleaning. But why clean on others? Why throw your dirt on others? If you want to clean it alone. Close your doors and talk as much as you like to yourself. Bring questions and answers. And make it a game. It will be good because that's all you are doing. But when you do it with others, you are never aware what nonsense you are doing. Alone you will become aware. Do it alone and soon you will realize what you have been doing your whole life. Then by and by, the more you become aware, the more words disappear, clouds disappear. And when the inner sky is without clouds, and your eyes are without words and thoughts, and your mouth is filled with silence, then you have eyes, then you have ears, then your senses are completely vacant. They are vehicles, mediums. Then communion is possible. Enough for today.